Welcome to the Watch Your Mouth podcast, a podcast about phrase etymology and why we say the things we say. I'm Milo.
And I'm Dave.
He's my dad.
And she is my daughter.
That's how that works.
It is how that works. Hey, Milo.
Hi. How are you today? Pretty good. How are you?
Doing pretty well. It's my turn to present. And so I wanted to kind of introduce it here by just talking about how normally when we do episodes, we are going to research idioms, phrases, kind of, but we expand beyond that, right?
We did last week.
Yeah. In fact, we're recording two episodes today. It's a Saturday and so almost mid-September. And we're doing the second episode. And the episode we just got done recording is a little bit different, not necessarily an idiom, but still kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm. Exploring words and things.
Yeah, and being curious. And just having a curiosity. So today I'm going to go back to the one that we released last week is going to be a spookier episode. We're going to take a break. We're going to need a break from spooky stuff. And I'm going to go back into kind of a biopic looking at an individual person. Now, if you are a fan of the podcast and you've been listening for a while, thank you, first of all, and you'll know that I've done this twice before. And I'm very curious, and I think it's really cool to take someone like Colonel Sanders or Dr. Seuss. Most of us have heard about these people all our lives, and we often don't know anything about them. And so today we're going to be adding another person to that mix.
In our trophy case of historical figures.
There it is. And so we're going to see if this person matches up. Because I will tell you, for me, and I think for you as well, I found out a lot. I thought there were some really interesting stories with Colonel Harlan Sanders and Dr. Seuss or Theodore Geisel. I thought those were pretty interesting guys. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. So this is how we're going to start. I'm going to give you some names, and I want you to guess whether these people are real or fictional.
Oh boy.
It's okay. But all of these people are tied to food products to promote food.
Okay.
And you'll get the gist of it very quickly. So you just tell me real quickly, is this a real person or based on a real person? Or is this just somebody they made up and threw their name on the product? Okay.
Okay. Sounds good.
Number one, Aunt Jemima.
Real I know she person. Was based on a real person, but there's not an actual Aunt Jemima.
Okay. Uncle Ben.
Ooh.
Uncle Ben
I'm going to say no.
Captain Crunch.
No.
Chef Boyardee.
Yes.
Betty Crocker.
No.
Out of all those names, one of them is a real person.
Oh.
And it is Chef Boyardee.
I did it, guys.
You did it.
I did it.
Yay.
I'm very proud of myself.
You should be. I think you nailed it. I'm going to look into Aunt Jemima a little bit because I think you're right. I think that was potentially based on, it's probably a conglomeration of a few different people from what I understand, like Robin Hood or King Arthur, probably not.
Right. Yeah, there was a lot of hubbub about that a little while back because the Aunt Jemima brand was branching off from that because of some, racially charged stereotypes involved in that brand. And some people put up a stink because they were like, there was an actual person, but I don't know the whole story of that. So I don't know where I sit. Maybe we'll talk about that at a different date.
So anyway, Chef Boyardee in that list is an actual real person. The other people are as fictional as Harry Potter or Noam Chomsky, not real people. Mm-hmm. What? You have a look on your face. What's wrong?
Noam Chomsky, please.
Noam Chomsky. Oh, of course. Okay. I do know that Noam Chomsky is a real person.
Yes. As is Noam Chomsky. Real chimp. Yeah, that was a real chimp they were teaching sign language to.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they named it Noam Chomsky, which is so great.
Fantastic. I have an inside joke, a running joke with Carol. I don't know why for a while she was insisting Noam Chomsky is a real person, which of course he is still alive today. And I pretend that he isn't. I'll pretend like she's made him up.
I didn't know he was still alive.
I think so.
Okay.
He was over at the house the other day. He's one of my wife's heroes, being a linguist. And I would tease her and say, that's not a person. And she's like, why are you talking? He's right here. And I'm like, that's the internet. You can't trust anything on the internet. It's an inside running joke with my wife, who doesn't really listen to the show, but I don't care. It amuses me. So.
But sometimes she's on the show.
And I'm presenting so I can do what I want. Yep. Some people may be familiar with the product, the Chef Boyardee line. It's a line of mostly canned Italian-based foods.
Uh-huh. I remember my little sister was very into the ravioli as a young person.
And you know, of course, they have a website.
Sure.
And you've probably been to the Chef Boyardee website today, I bet, right? You've been there?
Every day, first thing.
Checking out Chef Boyardee.
Got to keep up to date.
Yeah, and they do. So, but if you do venture out to the Chef Boyardee website, they, of course, have a different list of their products. And they have a classics section. So there's different categories of products for Chef Boyardee. I was kind of interested in their classics because I grew up, you know, as a child growing up in the 70s and 80s, mm-hmm. had my share of Chef Boyardee. The noodle nostalgia. Absolutely. Sounds like a really bad podcast. welcome to Noodle Nostalgia, where we talk about your favorite kind of noodles. So the classics, do you think you can name any of the classic Chef Boyardee brands, different types?
Ravioli. You
can't. Beef ravioli. Yep. You need, that's one.
Spaghetti.
Spaghetti and meatballs is two. You got
tortellini. No, I'm just naming pasta often do.
Yeah. It's odd when you do that without any bidding.
I'm just noodle nostalgic.
Well, you are. Beef ravioli, spaghetti and meatballs, and beefaroni. Those are a few of the classics in the can. Yeah. They somehow got beef inside those little noodles. Anyway. So I have a question for you.
Sure.
I know you've had some of these before.
Yes.
Do you remember the last time you had a Chef Boyardee product?
They were a pretty big staple in our household because
yes,
especially they were. Like when I was in high school, because like my mom worked. We made a lot of our own food, and I was too young. I had exploded eggs in microwaves and stuff. And so I was not trusted to do a lot of cooking. So when cooking for my younger sister, there was a lot of Chef Boyardee to be had. So it was probably around that time, the last time I had it. Cause I think once I left that house, I was like, I'm good.
Did you kind of have a go-to that you kind of liked or gravitated towards in the
Chef Always the beef ravioli. Always the ravioli.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I probably
sparkly sauce. For some reason, the sauce was like sparkly. I think because it was so oily that it just like sparkled.
We're going to get sued. I have not had Chef Boyardee. Boy, it's probably since you kids were little. I guarantee it's been decades. So,
oh boy, anyway, RD.
At least 10, 15 years. Yeah, exactly. But you know, when your kids are younger, we definitely had it around the house. I know that because it's pretty cheap and it's edible, right? I mean, it's edible.
It arguably has nutrition.
You may or may not remember this, but there's a thing that your mom used to do. That was kind of gross. Do you remember her eating? She'd open up a can of Chef Boyardee, like the ravioli, and she'd eat it cold out of the can.
Oh, yeah.
And that's
thing between her and Leah, where they would go, first one's cold, and eat a cold one, and then eat the rest of them up.
Yeah, I remember that. And that's actually why I divorced your mother, is because she did that. That's why.
That's fair. Yeah. Who can blame you?
Who can blame me? There would be some that would argue that she divorced me, but I that's not what this podcast is about. That might be the truth, but this is more entertaining to me. So as we get back to our friend, Chef Boyardee, we're going to be spending a little bit of time about the man the myth, the legend.
Yeah,
he's not a myth. He's a myth-ster. I'm sorry. Yeah, I apologize for that.
Please, I'm going to put in cricket sound effects.
I hope you do. That would be fantastic.
I did a lot of sound effects on the last episode I edited. Did you? So yeah, because you asked me to in the episode. Oh. You asked me to, so I did.
Well, good for you. I'll have to listen to it.
Yes, you did say immediately afterwards, you're like, I can't wait to hear how that turns out. And I'm like, he's never going to listen to it.
No, never going to listen. Never. I don't like to listen to it because I'm like, I'm bored with myself listening. I'm like, I know I said that. You're boring me. Keep going. Hopefully, though, people who listen aren't bored.
Yeah, well, because they haven't experienced it before.
I digress. I do bore easily. It's a problem. So when you buy a can or a product, Chef Boyardee product, you know, you see a picture of the chef is on there. Mm-hmm. It's part of their little logo, right? And then
he's a white squishman.
He's what?
He's a white squishman.
White
squishman? He is wearing all white. He is white, yes. And he seems to be a squish.
Well, he got to fit in the logo, so.
Yeah, he's just got a very round, like, face. You just want to bruise his cheeks.
He did Toby cheeks. Do you remember how Boyardee is spelled on the can? Let's go for that.
I feel like this is going to be like a mandala effect thing.
Well, we're going to find out.
Mandela, sorry, not mandala. Boyardee.
You nailed it. That is exactly right. I'm not even kidding. You nailed
it. I'm really winning the quizzes today.
You really are doing well. There'll be one to finish it off at the end. Too, and we'll see how you do with that. Okay. So something to look forward to. And again, listeners, you can play at home. You won't win anything, but you can play.
You'll win eternal glory.
Yes, we promise big things here at the Watch Your Mouth podcast. So it's not going to surprise you that Boyardee is not really, that's actually his last name. So Chef Boyardee is his last name, but that's not how it's spelled, of course.
Okay.
There's a little bit of an evolution to how his name got spelled the way it is now. And we'll talk about that later. When I was a kid, Chef Boyardee was spelled Boy-Ar-Dee.
Oh,
that's what you'd see on the products.
Interesting.
But you know, I'm going to pop in a little surprise quiz because you're doing so well. We're going to see how you.
Oh, no.
This one's going to break you though. I'm sorry. What do you think the actual spelling of his last name is? My father
always trying to break my spirit.
That's what it is to be a dad. How do you think, don't Google it.
I'm not Googling. I'm writing it down because I don't spell well out loud. It stresses me out.
Well, I don't want to cause you stress, but I want to break your spirit. So please try. How do you think you spell Boyardee, the actual Italian spelling?
I don't speak Italian, but I'm going to go with Boyardee.
You missed it by one letter. There's no E on the end.
I did pretty well then.
You did very, very well. I'm very surprised you got it right. That's
dang.
It really is Boyardee. That's how that name is. Chef Boyardee. That's his last name.
I need to go buy a lottery ticket.
What the heck? I guess so. So his full name is Ettore Boyardee.
Can you say that? Ettore Boyardee.
Ettore Boyardee. If you say that, if you look in a mirror and you say that and spin around and in the bathroom, a can of Chef Boyardee ravioli will
appear. No, your toilet will just fill up with SpaghettiOs.
No, gosh, why would you say that? That's so wrong.
Because it's the worst mental image I could possibly think of. Everyone, I love this tower as a podcaster. Everyone,
it is.
Picture your toilet full of SpaghettiOs.
Yeah. That's great. No one will eat a SpaghettiO ever again. I did want to point one thing out. This is for our older listeners. If you take a look at Bob Keeshan, who is better known as Captain Kangaroo, and you take a look at earlier, like 1940s pictures or 50s pictures of Chef Boyardee, they look eerily similar. Same person? Oh. Don't know.
40s, 50s. I did not realize that was a bit of a giveaway because I didn't realize it went back that far.
Oh, it does. It goes back, and we're going to talk about that. So If you don't know, Captain Kangaroo ran a children's show for many years in the 70s, and he had a character on there frequently named Mr. Green Jeans.
I like that. Who
had green pants. It's a true. That's true. That's a real thing.
It's a pretty lazy naming mechanism.
It was for children. Cut the guy some slack. He had puppets, too.
Okay, Mr. Gray Shirt.
Let's talk to Ettore.
Ettore.
So,
can you roll your R's?
Ettore. Yes. Ettore. So Ettore, thank you. Ettore was eventually known as Hector when he came to America, but we're going to call him Ettore. So okay. Hector is the anglicized version of Ettore.
Is but it? It sounds more like Arthur.
No.
How is Ettore spelled?
Ettore. How did you think it was spelled?
Sure. With an A.
I don't know. Oh. Well, so I'm not going to call him Hector. I'm going to call him Ettore because that's his birth name.
It's more fun to say.
So this it is because I get to roll my R's. And then for those of you who can't roll your eyes, I'm better than you. And just remember that. So Ettore was born in the year 1897.
Okay.
On October 22nd.
Same birthday as my roommate. Year and everything.
Oh, wow.
She's a ghost.
That's fair. He was born in October 22nd, 1897 in Pacenza, Italy, which is in, I had to look it up, and it's actually in northern Italy. And the city is famous because there is a copper angel on top the bell tower, and it rotates.
Oh.
That seemed kind of weird.
What for? Attention.
I don't know.
Is it a weather vane?
I don't think so. I'm not sure why, but
it seems sacrilegious if it was.
the angel, a copper angel, and it's probably green because you know how copper kind of tarnishes. But anyway, apparently Pacenza is part of Italy's famous food valley.
Oh,
his parents were Giuseppe and Maria Maffi Boiardi.
Every Italian woman is named Maria. So
it has to be. It is at some point in their name. Ettore took to cooking very early in life. And it said it was when he was a baby for a rattle, he used a wire whisk instead. And he would make a mean cacciatore even as a small child. Okay. That part's not true about the cacciatore, but using the whisk as a rattle apparently is true.
Okay.
But it sounds a little bit made up, a little bit too perfect.
Some Paul Bunyan legacy here.
Yeah, we'll go with it, though. We do know that when he was 11 years old, he started working as an apprentice chef at La Croce Bianca, which means, can you figure out?
The white, what was the first word?
Yes, croce.
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 Crotch? Croce? Are you, is that a G or a C?
C. C-R-O-C-E. Ah, yeah. So it means the white cross.
I was close.
So at 11 years old, he was doing a little bit of food prep. They would let him peel potatoes and stuff and take the trash out. But at 11, he's already interested in food and food preparation and has a job at 11 in Pacenza, Italy. There's a decent amount of information about Chef Boyardee, but there's not a ton, not near as much as I found. There's books written about Colonel Sanders and Dr. Seuss. There's no books written. There's some articles about Ettore, but there's not really real super in-depth stuff, but there's some pretty interesting, as you'll see, there's some pretty interesting details here. So we don't really know a lot about his teenage years, but we know that he spent time in Paris and London in his early to mid-teens, and that's where he really cultivated his talent for cooking. And despite the, some may say, bland nature of the products today, he really apparently was quite an incredible chef.
Would you say it brought him joy, R.D.?
I think that would bring us all people not listening to us anymore. But I think that's better than the joke I made with the crickets afterwards. But I think it did bring him joy, RD. And to double down on your joke, but yeah, he really enjoyed cooking a lot. Was very, very talented. He was really a prodigy. But even though we're not sure how much time he spent in Paris and London, and we're not sure which restaurants he was in or was working at, we do know that on May 9, 1914, at the age of 16, he arrived at Ellis Island.
Ba-da-ba.
So he comes to America in 1914, and his brother was working at
the Boyar NYC.
What? What did you say?
He was then Chef Boyar NYC.
What is that's terrible. That's not even, I'm not even gonna acknowledge that joke. You have to edit that out. That's still
no, awful. It's so staying. Bad. It was very good. NYC rhymes with D, so it's fine.
No, it's so bad. So anyway, Ettore's brother, older brother, worked at what was called the Plaza Hotel in New York City, which I, of course, I looked it up. I'm like, well, what's this Plaza Hotel? Plaza Hotel still stands today. Oh. It's a 5-star hotel with, I think, a restaurant in it. And it opened in 1907. So the restaurant, by the time he started working at it, had only been around for about 7 years. But it's still there today. And it's pretty fancy. He started waiting tables. And within a year, he was head chef of the restaurant.
Wow.
So he's 17 years old, and damn, he is the head chef at one of the premier restaurants. So he's this Italian immigrant, boom, hits the shores, starts as a you know, busboy waiting tables, whatever. In a year, he's the head chef. Just crazy.
That's wild.
So apparently, and it gets better. Apparently, he was cooking up recipes from, you know, his hometown of Pacenza, and he's, you know, so customers are so impressed that he gets kind of sniped away by a different restaurant.
Okay.
So he becomes the head chef at a different restaurant called Barbetta on 48th Street in New York, which apparently is also still there.
Wow.
And then for whatever reason, the details are not available, but he had a summer job cooking down in White Sulphur Springs of West Virginia.
Okay.
So, well, he's not that old. He's like, you know, 18, 19, 20 years old here. While he's working in West Virginia, he is called on to cater a wedding reception for one Woodrow Wilson,
oh,
who is the president of the United States at the time.
Wow.
As he gets married, Woodrow Wilson, I'm sure I'll just name her. Even though you know, and everyone knows President Woodrow Wilson's wife's name, Edith Bowling Galt. You knew that.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a portrait of her in my room.
And the tattoo. You forgot the tattoo. So Woodrow Wilson was so impressed with Ettore's cooking that when the soldiers, 2,000 soldiers returned from World War One in late 1918, he had Ettore cook the meal for this homecoming meal for these 2,000 soldiers. This is a 21-year-old kid, and he, like, what an honor to be chosen. It's just kind of an amazing. And I start to see some of these details, and I'm like, all I know of Chef Boyardee is his, you know, he used to do commercials when I was a kid, you know, and he's kind of the pudgy looking guy with the Italian, the white, you know, cook outfit on and, like, you know, whatever. I didn't even think twice about him, but this guy was, it's pretty amazing, some of the stuff that he did. So after he, all this has happened, he receives a job offer in Cleveland. His name's come out. He's kind of like the Gordon Ramsay, of the day, you know, except without the anger, probably, or the TV show, because they didn't have TV then. But he's one of the most famous chefs in America. Like, people know who this guy is. So for whatever reason, he gets this restaurant in Cleveland wants him as their head chef, and he decides to go and work at this. It was called the Hotel Winton in Cleveland, and it was when he was working there that he met a very pretty young Polish girl named, are you ready for this?
Sure am.
Helen Roblowski.
Yes.
Robolewski. Sorry.
Yes. Robolewski. That's Helen less good, Robolewski. But still good.
Yeah. Yeah. You like that? Helen Roblowski? Roblowski? I don't know.
It's very good.
I'm not sure. So he sees this pantry, the girl working in the pantry, and they fall in love and they get married April 7, 1923. Now, as probably doesn't surprise, what was that you were singing?
No, I said a celebration for their matrimony.
They appreciate it, even though they're both dead. But so they, of course, Ettore his lifelong dream is to open a restaurant of his own. He's worked at a number of restaurants now. He's married, and apparently in multiple sources, I found that his wife was very instrumental in encouraging him to actually open up his own restaurant. Now, Wikipedia says this restaurant was opened in 1926. So if you've, no one in the world is actually going to research this or look into it like I did. But if you did, you're going to notice Wikipedia says 1926. He opened his first restaurant. I found enough articles out there that I think it was 1924, not actually 1926. So
bum, bum, bum.
Wikipedia got it wrong.
You got to go edit that.
No.
It's your duty as a denizen of the internet.
Not going to do it. So the name of his first restaurant was Il Giardino d'Italia, which you could probably
the Italian garden, maybe.
That's it. Yeah, the Garden of Italy.
The Olive Garden. Oh, yes. And now you know the rest of the story.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that, Paul Harvey. he actually changed the name later. I think it was called Chef Hector's. So the restaurant, of course, did extremely well. People lined up. They didn't have the little beeper things then. So you go to a busy restaurant now, they give it the little beeper. They didn't have that then. So people just
actually they just text you now. Room. They don't even have the beepers anymore. The beepers are obsolete. Oh,
I'm so behind. It's like I was talking of they give you a pager. No, but yeah, they just text you, which is kind of nice. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so we have to remember though that back, we're in the middle 1920s, the roaring 20s, and we're so familiar with Italian food now, or at least mm-hmm. our version of it. But back in the 1920s, Italian food was pretty exotic. It was definitely something that, especially more on the East Coast, people were very aware of. But it was not something that was people were very aware of even what it was.
Okay.
And as I was doing some digging for this episode, I found a delightful, yes, I said delightful, article written by Elaine Sikora.
Okay.
Which I really like. The title of her article is Me and Chef Boyardee, How He Made Me the Woman I Am Today.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, apparently it's a cute story. She ate at this restaurant in Cleveland when she was five.
Okay.
I think in the 50s. And she ate her plate of spaghetti so quickly, they gave her a second helping for free. Because this little girl so loved the spaghetti that the waiter was like, hey, we have to give her some more. She has great appetite. Yeah.
That's very cute. But also I'm picturing her just like getting on all fours at the table and just being a dog. I'm like,
well, they said she kind of hovered. Her dad said she kind of hovered above the plate.
Oh, she hoovered it up as she hovered. She
hoovered as she hovered.
Yep.
But she actually, Elaine went on to become a food critic, and she really kind of says that Chef Boyardee was really her, the wind beneath her wings, her muse, her inspiration. But that's I wanted really to read cute. It's kind of cool. So I wanted to read part of the article that she wrote, and here it is. It says, she says, Cleveland was a pretty tony town in those days too. And local hoteliers wasted no time in wooing the Italian wunderkind to the North Coast. Hector arrived at the Hotel Winton on Prospect Avenue in 1917, where he commanded the kitchen and caused a veritable sensation with his exotic spaghetti dinners, which, much like sushi in the 1980s, proved to be a thrilling departure from Clevelanders' usual Midwest fare.
I've never heard spaghetti called exotic. Go on. No,
well, that's what I'm saying, though. In the 20s, it was more exotic.
It's a really interesting perspective.
Yeah, but for now, we're like, yeah, you're laughing. Spaghetti is exotic? Mm-hmm. Come on. To continue her article, she says, it wouldn't be a stretch to call the chef a groundbreaker. Historian Pamela D'Orazio Dean, curator for Italian-American history at the Western Reserve Historical Society, explains Italian food was foreign at that time. It was pungent. It was offensive. Yet Clevelanders liked his food so much, they were asking how they could make it at home. And this is from something else I read. This is a quote from Elaine Sikora that, not part of the article, but I found this from a different place. She says, Italians in that time were referred to as garlic eaters. The flavor and vibrancy for the food made Protestant Midwesterners a little uncomfortable. It was considered almost sinful. That was one of the amazing things about the story, is that Boyardi was able to win over a city that had no interest in Italian food before that. So
weren't Protestant Midwesterners worried about at that time?
Hey, wait a minute. Is that different? Is that different? I think it's sin. I'm pretty sure it's sin. So, but as his popularity spread, people like the sauce so much, as I was saying, they were like, how do I make this at home? Can I take this home? So he started taking glass milk bottles, empty glass milk bottles, rinsing them out and filling it up with the spaghetti sauce and selling it to people. This is where it all begins. Mm-hmm. In 1927, he meets Maurice and Eva Wiener. And they were, I know.
I'm 12. Were,
yes,
I laughed.
They loved his restaurant, but they also happened to own a local self-service grocery store chain, and they helped the Boyardi brothers, because by this time his brothers were starting to get in on the act. They helped them develop a process for canning the food. So they also helped him get a distribution set up across the United States through their groceries wholesales partners. This product, Chef Boyardee's product, was being stocked in markets everywhere, to the point where he had to open a factory in 1928. And it was his brothers, Paul and Mario, were part of it now, and they officially launched the Chef Boyardee Food Company. Okay. They had three flavors of sauce: traditional, spicy, and mushroom. That's what they sold. But they had one problem, and this is where we're going to go back to his last name. People saw that name and they didn't know how to say it. Mm-hmm. So the salesman didn't, his own salesman had trouble seeing that name and like, how do you say this? This looks really weird to me. That's why they went to the phonetic spelling.
Yeah. With the dashes too. Just like, here you go, guys. I'll spell it out for you.
It's called lobbing you a softball, just so you know.
So a soft meatball.
Hey, there it is. Hey, there you go, Milo. Very good.
Oh, no.
Terrible, terrible accent.
We're not Italian.
No.
I'm so sorry to any Italian listenership we may have.
And that we used to have. Goodbye. After the sauce, and their sauce sold very well, they decided to put together a complete pasta meal. It included a canister of grilled Parmesan cheese, a box of spaghetti, and a jar of pasta sauce, which was held together with a cellophane plastic wrap. That was one of the first, this guy, Chef Ettore Boyardi, was one of the first people to really get the idea and capture the vision of convenience food. This wasn't really a thing at that point. And he was able to make his meals inexpensively because he grew all his produce, and he opened a factory in Pennsylvania, and he grew like his own mushrooms and his own tomatoes. And he was like at the time, the number one importer of olive oil. Parmesan cheese, like in the United States.
Wow.
So
it's a titan of industry.
So you know what happens in the late 1920s, right? In the history of America?
Slightly familiar, yes.
Yeah, a little thing called the Great Depression.
Yeah.
But he flourished during the Great Depression because his meals were very inexpensive.
Gotcha.
And at the time, people are like, this is good food. It's inexpensive. I can buy it for, it was like 26 cents or something like that. And so people were able to buy that. And apparently it really helped solidify his brand and get a footing, because anything, you know, obviously a lot of people started businesses in the early 20s and they died in the Great Depression because, you know, it crushed them. So he got through that. And then, of course, you get into the 40s and World War II erupts, right?
Yep.
And so one of the other people on his staff figured out a way with the army that they were making, the Chef Boyardee company was making sea rations for the soldiers.
Okay.
So for a lot of World War II, a lot of the soldiers basically ate Chef Boyardee products.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, there was such a demand that the factory had to start operating 24 hours a day.
Wow.
So by the time the war ended, the company employed 5,000 people and production had far exceeded anything they had done before in the 30s. And Ettore was a big supporter of, you know, the soldiers. And so when he wasn't overseeing operations at his factory, he was participating in parades and encouraging support for the troops. and he made sure all of his employees knew the importance of what it was that they were making and doing.
Okay.
To the point that he was awarded the Gold Star by the military, which is the highest honor granted to civilians.
Wow.
Like, I know. But then
this guy's kind of like the American dream on paper, huh?
That's actually a couple articles I read that referenced him as that he is the epitome of the American dream. But they ran into a little bit of trouble after that because there was so much cash coming in. And of course, you've got family and everyone's trying to make decisions. Mm-hmm. I always find it interesting as you look around, you get details. Because if you look on the Chef Boyardee website, it just talks about, hey, at such and such a time, they sold the company to this other company, you know, and for about $6 million back, I think it was in the 50s.
Wow.
And but you look a little deeper in different articles, and there was apparently a bit of some internal family struggles about cash flow and ownership and direction of the company. And because they're trying to manage the rapid growth of the company, and that growth, that success, ended up, they're like, hey, you know what? We just need to sell this and be done with it. And they sold it for $6 million.
Wow.
So through the span of his life, Ettore opened up at least 3 restaurants, opened and helped run. I believe they're all closed down now. And the company he sold, he sold his company to American Home Foods, which later became International Home Foods, which is now a super conglomerate called Conagra, I believe, if I'm saying that right.
Yeah, I think that's how it's said. Yay.
They're a huge billion-dollar company.
Yep.
And they are making all kinds of money still selling Chef Boyardee products now. Ettore was, he actually officially retired. He was a consultant for American Home Foods. He retired in 1978. Found some personal accounts because, you know, this guy died in 1985, which is the year I graduated from high school. Mm-hmm. So our lives overlapped to quite a degree. And there are a number of firsthand accounts of the type of person Ettore was. These are from a friend, Mary Garvey, who was a family friend. This is what she had to say. So apparently he was always kind of stayed that plump mustachioed chef who, you know, really who worked at, he represented his brand in print and on television until 1979. And he was described as an elegant, charming, never without a tie, very European, formal, but very warm. He cooked very simply and cautioned against using too much garlic. He was jovial, fun-loving. He always had a twinkle in his eye. And so Ettore died in a nursing home at Parma, Ohio in 1985, and his obituary made the New York Times.
Oh, wow.
He's currently buried in Chardon, Ohio at the All Souls Cemetery, and he left an estate estimated at $60 million. Chef Boyardee is one last thing before our final quiz, which I promised. Chef Boyardee is one of the only brands to request to be removed from an episode of Seinfeld.
Okay.
So they wrote Chef Boyardee into an episode of Seinfeld, and
the product or the person?
No, the product. And
okay.
So they apparently probably went to them just to make sure it was okay, and they looked at how it was being used. They said, "No, please don't use our product's name, or there'll be trouble." Uh-huh. The name of the episode is called The Rye.
Okay.
And Kramer is allowed to operate a hansom cab for a week, which is a little cab pulled by horses.
Oh.
And Kramer decides to feed the horse excess cans of beefaroni.
Okay.
Which causes the horses to have frequent and foul smelling flatulence.
Yeah, that's probably fair. They didn't like that one.
So as a result, at the request, the name was changed in the episode from Beefaroni to Beefarino.
Which is better.
That was their switch. You know what? It's fine. Screw you, Chef Boyardee. We're going to call it, instead of Beefaroni, is now Beefarino.
It's great.
And you can't sue us. Are you ready for your final quiz?
I am ready.
All right. I am going to list some discontinued Chef Boyardee products. And I want you to guess which ones are fake.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
All right. Beefaghetti.
No.
Chef Junior Ninja Turtle Pasta Shapes.
Yes.
Chili Cheese Dog Twisteroni.
Yes.
Because again, you have to think of, are these things I made up out of my own little brain, or are these real products? Kickin' Sloppy Joe.
Oh, that could go either way. I'm going to say no.
Pac-Man Pasta and Golden Chicken.
Oh, no. Hopefully no. Don't like the sound of that one.
Ready? Pasta Fazoo.
I hope it's true, but I'm going to say no because it sounds like you.
And then tic-tac-toe pasta shapes.
Yes.
Those are all actual. They're all. I tricked you.
They
are all real products. Okay. All of them are real products. Huh. Listeners at home, I hope you were playing or in your car. And, you know, send us an email. Get us on Facebook. Let us know how you did. But, yeah, I decided not to throw in a fake one. Those are all real discontinued Chef Boyardee products.
I remembered one or two.
90. Did you?
Yeah.
Which ones?
Chili cheese that rung a bell. Like, I'm pretty sure I've seen that on shelves before.
Gosh, it sounds like a nightmare. A culinary.
That may be
nightmare.
Why it stuck in my head. And that's, I know I've seen the tic-tac-toe ones.
Oh, all right. That's fair. So I have to ask you, Milo, that's the end of my episode. So as we always do, what stood out to you?
So before 40 minutes ago, I didn't know he was a person. So that stuck out to me.
As it should.
Yeah, he just sounded like the most likely out of the list that you gave me. So got that right. But like, yeah, I don't know. So I learned a lot this episode. It's a conflicting thing to hear a story of a positive American dream, because obviously we know that thing is bunk and it's rooted in a lot of nationalism and capitalistic endeavors that aren't exactly healthy. But at the same time, when you're raised so strongly with like this concept, it's kind of nice to see someone actually succeed at it. You're like, oh yeah, this did used to be a place where somebody could come from far away and really just have opportunity. So it's kind of nice. It's a very happy story, and nice to get a little happy story. So yeah, that stuck out to me. I'm glad that he had what seemed like a pretty exciting, happy life.
Yeah, it's pretty, for me, it was kind of wild to go, wow, this kid, this young man at such a very young age, being an immigrant, came here and flourished. And of course, that's not, you know, clearly not what a lot of people dream of. And very few, it's very difficult to achieve certainly his level of success, but it is a happy story. And I wondered if I would run into some of the darker details like I did with my other two biopic episodes. Yes. I did.
They had lots of negative details.
There was just nothing on this guy, which is fine. I'm not trying to find that.
Yeah.
But you know, usually it's like, hey, we screw up and make mistakes, and frequently that gets thrown into the story as well. But this seems like overall it's a pretty happy story, which is awesome. That's really cool.
Which it could be just because there's less information out there about old Chef Boyardee. But
Can you say Atore though?
Atore.
Atore. So Milo, let me ask you.
Yeah.
This is the third episode like this I've done.
Yeah.
Colonel Sanders, Dr. Seuss, Chef Boyardee. How do you think this stacks up with the first two?
So I liked this one because it was a unique thing that I didn't even really know if this was a person. Like, I hadn't really thought about it. Whereas the other two are obviously like pretty famous historical figures. Yeah. Because of that also, there were maybe fewer spicy details, but.
Or spicy products.
So I think the Colonel Sanders one is still my favorite, but this was a good one.
That was a wild, Colonel Sanders is a wild ride. I was so excited to research that. I was like, this is amazing. He shot a guy. Like, what? He
did shoot a guy.
And he was extremely profane. I mean, this is a guy. Yep. He just kind of was like a legend.
Yeah, he seems a little bit less jovial than good old Chef Boyardee.
Yeah. Well,
I wonder if they ever met. Oh, they lived at the same time.
Yeah, I wonder if they were going to fight. I wonder who. My money would have been on Colonel Harlan Sanders.
I would love a fighting style game that was all food mascots.
Oh my gosh, you and I that just made
great.
$1 million idea, 100%. Yeah, and then like that creepy little Cheetos, you know, whatever he's supposed
Chester
to be.
Cheetah.
Just gets his butt kicked by like everyone. He just gets destroyed. Tony the Tiger just eats him. Mm-hmm, anyway. Mm-hmm.
Or little Debbie does a body little slam.
Smacks the crap out of him. Just pile drives him into a bunch of Cheetos, and he just throws Cheetos. That's his only power. He throws Cheetos, and he just bounces harmlessly off people. And they're like, "What are you even doing?"
I think I would main the Cookie Crisp Wolf though, because he's got a manic energy about him. Could really use that.
Yeah. How about the bee from the Honey Nut Cheerios bee?
I don't trust him.
Exactly. He's so small, you can't. Well, okay, we're starting to go off the rails. We've got to wrap this up.
Who knows if this podcast even has rails anymore? But no, you know, we do have a Facebook group. Yay. And you can join that in order to see pictures and updates and all that fun stuff. You can leave us a review on your listening platform of choice. You can email us at watchyourmouthpod@gmail.com. And thank you to Tony Gebhardt for our theme song. And thank you, listener, for being here with us today.
You specifically, listener, listening right now.
Thank you,
Steve. Not just superfan Jane in Australia.
Hi, superfan Jane.
Shout out.
I wonder if there's Chef Boyardee and Jane in
Jane? Is there Chef Boyardee and Jane?
Yes, is there Chef Boyardee and Jane? I meant Australia, but yes, also Jane. Let us know. Yeah.
The only listener to ever send us product. And we ate and consumed.
We did. I still occasionally will. I have a couple of the eucalyptus hard candies left, and I like those. I am savoring them.
Thank you, Jane.
Thank you, Jane. You're great.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We appreciate it, everybody.
We hope you have a good week, and we will see you next Tuesday. But in the meantime, I'm Milo.
And I'm Dave.
Stay curious and carry a hatchet.
And a can of beefaroni.
Check it, people. We're not going to add that.